Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Oakhurst, California, and was a record-breaking salesman by age 19. A year later, he was hit head-on by a drunk driver and found dead at the scene. Clinically dead for 6 minutes, in a coma for 6 days, he was told he would never walk again. Today, he's a number one bestseller, author, international keynote speaker, Hall of Fame business achiever, success coach, and ultra-marathon runner. His name? Hal Elrod. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Hal Elrod, the author of the number one bestseller, The Miracle Morning, and also Taking Life Head On. Hal, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm excited to be on, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are happy things, fortunately, for me to talk about. I grew up in a small town, as you mentioned, Oakhurst, California, up near Yosemite National Park, and it was kind of the best of all worlds. We had the lake in the summer, and we got to ski in the wintertime. And when I was in sixth grade, my parents bought the Oakhurst Market, so the little grocery store in the middle of town. And it was one of those built in 1945, so the back of the store was actually a house. So we lived at the market. It was just all, you know, you literally took 12 steps out of the check stand number one into our the front door of our living room. So kind of a unique way to grow up. And it was fun. I mean, you know, we needed groceries. You'd walk out in your pajamas and grab a box of cereal, and then at night we'd clear the aisles and fill the shopping carts with couch pillows and ride around with our friends and rollerblade. And then I started working at 12, you know, and really my parents kind of really taught me that, you know, if you want something, you earn it, right? Where nothing's handed to you. And I mean, that's one of the most valuable lessons that I learned growing up. And at 15, I started my first business, and a mobile disc jockey business. Got a gig on the radio, started DJing weddings and school dances. And, you know, I think I was making $75 an hour when I was doing the DJ work, which, you know, for a 15-year-old, I mean, that was just unbelievable.
That's more than we're making today, Hal.
Yeah, that's a good point, I guess. Yeah, not even just for a 15-year-old. Of course, I'm only working, you know, 4 hours a week versus 40. But, you know, at 15, that was pretty cool. You know, I didn't have to work all the time, could focus on my studies, and then, you know, in the weekend make enough money to last me for a while.
Hal, at age 19, you became the all-time record-breaking sales representative for a $200 million marketing company. How do you explain that you were so successful in sales at such a young age?
Well, you know, I started selling Cutco cutlery, which, you know, many people probably know. They've been around for 55 years, and was not at all, didn't consider myself a salesperson. It was a friend of mine, you know, was doing it, talked me into, hey, give it a shot, you'd be great. So I decided to give it a shot, and you go through a 3-day training, and they give you really great training. And on the second day, I thought, you know, they're telling us about the sales records for the first 10 days in the job. They have what's called the fast start, and it's designed to get your confidence up and give you some momentum by, you know, giving some prizes and incentives to, you know, to really get you to work hard in the beginning so you get the right tone set for your career. And he had told us that the record was $12,000. So the most anyone had sold in 50 years in the western half of the United States was $12,000. And I don't know what it was, but Jack, for the first time in my life, I had the thought, and I think it's one of the most important thoughts or beliefs for us to carry forward, and that is that, you know what, if they could do it, why not me? You know, if this girl could do it, why not me? And I found out she lived in, you know, an hour and a half south of me. She wasn't like a rich Beverly Hills, you know. I mean, it was pretty pretty competitive, you know, demographics that I'd be working with. And I thought, why not me? And I decided, you know what, I want to break the record. And I can tell you, it wasn't on my own accord. It was, I went to my manager, Jesse. I said, Jesse, I want to break this record. And I thought he'd be so excited, but he really was. He goes, you know, Hal, I hear that every week from somebody, but nobody ever does it. You know, he goes, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to be willing to commit. You know, it's like anything in life, right? It's one thing to say you want something, but what are you willing to sacrifice? What are you willing to do to make it happen? And he said, Hal, if you're willing to, you know, dedicate the next 10 days where, I mean, it's going to take a lot more work than you've ever put forth in your life, and you're going to have to overcome challenges and bad days and disappointments and rejection and failure. And, you know, it started to not sound as exciting as I was making it up in my own mind. But he said, you know, if you're willing to commit to give it everything you have, I can coach you through the process. I can guide you. I can lead you through it. And I said, I'm in. I'll do it. You tell me what to do, and I'll do it. And for the next 10 days, I did an average of 6.2 appointments per day, and an average of 2 hours an appointment. So I was working 12 hours a day plus drive time, and ended up selling $15,000 and, you know, and breaking the all-time record.
Hell, what do all great salespeople have in common?
I mean, I think there's a few things they have in common. You know, I mean, the believing in what they're selling, you know, believing that it will add value to the lives of who you're selling it to. That's kind of a foundation, because if you don't, you know, you're either you're not going to feel good about it, or you're not going to do well because you're not going to have conviction. But I think the other thing is good salespeople, I think that the best salespeople look out for the best interests of the people that they're selling to. You know, it's not just about selling your product for the sake of selling your product. It's really about fact-finding and figuring out is this really something that is going to benefit their life? Does it fit their budget right now? And I think that's really important. And when you live from a sense of purpose and you sell from a sense of purpose where you're looking out for the best interest of the people that you're selling to, I feel like that's how you go far. And that's where you develop a long-term success when it comes to selling. And then last but not least, probably the most important thing is your effort. It's all a numbers game. And for me, I did more appointments in my first 10 days than probably anyone else had ever done. And that's why I sold more. In fact, I had more no sales. I had 20 no sales. 20 people out of those 62 that I saw in my first 10 days did not buy from me. And when it was all over, I didn't realize this, but the other 15 trainees in the class that I was in, only one of them had even done that many appointments. So I was willing to go through more no's than they were willing to schedule appointments, right? So that's really what it boils down to be successful in sales. Is it is a numbers game, and you want to sell the most. You got to work the hardest and see the most people.
We're talking to Hal Elrod. When we come back, we'll ask him about a day that changed his life forever. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Hal Elrod, who in December of 99 was 20 years old, had it all, a great life. Hal, December 3rd, 1999, 11:32 p.m., Highway 99, what happened?
I was driving home after giving a speech, and as one of the top sales reps for the company I work for, I basically became the signature keynote speaker at every event. They would always have me give motivational or sales training or time management messages or whatever. And that night I had gotten my first standing ovation. So I was like on cloud nine. I mean, wow. I had a room of people stand up and applaud after my speech. So really excited. Got in my brand new Ford Mustang, and as you mentioned, about 11:32 p.m. Doing 70 miles an hour on the freeway, cruise control set. A man that I had never met before left the bar a couple miles up ahead of me, and he got on the freeway going the wrong direction, and he was driving a full-size Chevy truck. And I don't remember what I'm about to tell you. I just know this from police reports and eyewitnesses and, you know, hospital records and that sort of thing. But the drunk driver hit me head-on at 70 miles an hour. Sent my car into oncoming traffic, and the worst of it was really yet to come when my car spun sideways and the car behind me, I just spun in front of them and they hit me in the door, in the driver's side door on my left side at 70 miles an hour. And completely devastated the left side of my body. I broke 11 bones. I broke my leg, my femur, the biggest bone in the human body. I broke my pelvis in three places. It was smashed between the door and the center console. Broke my arm, crushed my elbow, fractured all the bones in my eye to where now it's all rebuilt in metal. My ear was almost completely severed. The top of my skull was sliced open. And immediately, I'm grateful for the design of the human body, but I was in a coma. I mean, unable to withstand that kind of pain. My brain and body got shut down, and I was in a coma, bleeding on the side of the freeway profusely. And it took them about an hour to, between the time of the crash and the jaws of life, you know, cutting the fire department, cutting me out of the car, because I was trapped in there, smashed, you know, between the door and everything else. And about an hour later, when they pulled me out of the car, I had lost so much blood that I died. I my heart stopped beating. I stopped breathing. I was clinically dead. And they worked on me, and I was dead for about 5 or 6 minutes. And they were able to, you know, miraculously bring me back to life and rush me to the hospital where I would undergo surgery. And my mom and dad, I think, had the worst of this. I'm a dad now. I've got a, you know, 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, and my mom and dad got the call that, hey, you know, your son's in critical condition. You know, we're doing everything we can to save his life. 6 days later, I came out of the coma and woke up to face the reality that I had broken all these bones. I had permanent brain damage. My short-term memory was almost non-existent, and the doctor said I would probably never walk again. And so that was, you know, that was the reality that I woke up to and that I was faced with. And like, you know, like all of us, I mean, you may not have gone through an accident, but, you know, we all have our adversity and our challenges. And it's the old adage that it's not what happens to you, but it's how you respond to what happens. And I just realized, I don't, you know, call it a divine intervention, I don't know what it was exactly, but I just really quickly took on this mindset that, you know what, I can't change this. So there's no point in feeling sorry for myself. There's no point in feeling bad about it. There's no point in wishing it were different, because it can't be different. So the only intelligent choice that I have, if I want to make the most of my future and the present, is to completely and unwaveringly accept my circumstances as they are now and maintain unwavering faith in where I want to go and that I can get there, and put forth extraordinary effort every single day to make that a reality, and call it the power of positive thinking. But 3 weeks later, after being told I would never walk again, I took my first step. And 4 weeks after that, I went home. And a week after that, I got back to work against doctor's orders and went out and sold some Cutco to take number 4 out of 1,000 sales reps in a sales competition that when I got out of the hospital, I was in the middle of the sales competition. I was a week behind, but I had a week left to try to make up where everyone else had already been working, and I was able to do that. And you know, and just, yeah, just really realized that, hey, you know, everything, that all those adages about everything happens for a reason and we can do anything we put our mind to, and all of those that most people just kind of, you know, they're numb to them, they're all true. You know, they're all absolutely true. And that's one of the biggest things that I learned, is I kind of felt like I was a living example of, you know, that all those things are absolutely true.
15 years later, you're number one best-selling author, international keynote speaker, Hall of Fame business achiever, success coach, and ultramarathon runner, and latest book, number one bestseller, The Miracle Morning. What does that book teach us?
Yeah, The Miracle Morning, it's funny, I was just, before we had our call, I was reviewing my goals for next year and creating my affirmations and the whys, but, you know, the why for each of the goals that I'm working on. And I really believe, based not on my own opinion, but based on the hundreds of emails I've received from people that have read The Miracle Morning, and also the hundreds of book reviews. If you go to Amazon right now, I mean, it's amazing. There's 191 book reviews, average of, I think, 4.8 out of 5 stars. And the feedback I've received is things like, this changed my life more than not just any other book, but than anything else I've ever done or I've ever tried. And because of that, I really feel like it is my greatest value that I have to offer the world. And so this year, as I was going through my goals, I thought, I can't just let The Miracle Morning keep doing its thing. And I mean, the word of mouth, it's a phenomenon in terms of, is doing really well. But I thought, I've got to keep sharing this with the world. I've got to, you know, do more TV shows. I've got to do more radio shows like we're doing now, you know. I have a responsibility. And I literally wrote in capital letters, it is my responsibility to share the Miracle Morning with as many people as I possibly can. And in terms of what it is, it's something that it's basically, I guess the premise is the idea that most Americans waste their mornings. But science has proven that the morning is the time when our willpower is the strongest, and also that how we start our day sets the tone for how the day ends up. For example, most people have a, you know, they hit the snooze button over and over again. They have a lazy, lethargic, unfocused, unproductive morning, and that's how their days go, and that's how their life is, and that's how their year ends, with disappointment and regret because they weren't as focused and productive and everything else as they needed to be. Well, I had an epiphany when I was studying successful people about 4 years ago, and I was actually at my lowest point in my life. It wasn't the accident. It was when I had lost my business. My business was failing. I had lost my house, and I was deeply depressed. And I started just reaching out and studying successful people to figure out what they were doing that I wasn't doing. And the one commonality that I found is they are all waking up earlier than they have to. You know, most people wait to wake up until they have to be somewhere or do something. Successful people, they don't waste the morning. They know better. They wake up and they focus on their goals and they do personal development so that they can become a better version of themselves. And they do things like meditation and affirmations and visualization, and they exercise and they read self-help books and they journal, right? And I thought, what if I could take all of those practices and condense them and do them in an hour every morning? And long story short, I started doing this. I was excited. I mean, I went from being depressed to going, wait a minute, this could be the thing that changes my life. The next morning, I woke up an hour earlier than I had to be at work. And within 2 months of doing what I now call the Miracle Morning, back then there was no name to it. It was just, you know, I was just trying it out, my morning routine. But after 2 months, my income had more than doubled, my depression was over, and I went from not exercising at all to training for that ultra marathon runner or ultra marathon that you had mentioned in the introduction. And now I've seen the same types of results where people are, whether they're losing weight or starting a business or achieving goals they never thought they could achieve or overcoming a depression or whatever, the Miracle Morning has universally become a solution that does that for people and really faster than they ever thought possible.
We're talking to Hal Elrod. If you want to learn more, www.themiraclemorning.com. Themiraclemorning.com. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Prasula, and we're with Hal Elrod, number one best-selling author, The Miracle Morning, who says the first 60 minutes of your morning is the most important time in your life each day. Hal, you talk about the life savers. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, it came down to when I was, once I had this realization that I need to start waking up early and working on myself. You know, I need to, in other words, I need to develop myself into the person that I need to be to create what I want for my life. And most people don't think that way. They think, I am who I am, and I'm going to do the best with what I've got, and I'm going to try to create an amazing life. And they're always struggling. You know, the way that I like to see it is, if the level of success that you desire, which is true for all of us, is level 10 success, but you're at a level 2 personally, meaning your knowledge, your skills, your confidence, your, you know, your abilities, if they're at a level 2 or a 3, which is, you know, most people, they want level 10 success, but they're not yet at a level 10 themselves. And so I realize I've got to become a level 10 person so that level 10 success is just what you know, is just what I do. It's what I'll achieve. It's what I'll attract into my life, etc. So I thought, I got to wake up early. Okay, that got that one, even though I wasn't a morning person. I mean, I'll tell you, this was a major limiting belief I had to come over. I was a major, what I call a snoozeaholic, right? I hit the snooze button over and over until the last possible minute. So the first challenge was already challenging enough, which is, okay, gosh, got to get up early. I got to do it. And then I thought, well, what am I going to do during that time? Am I just going to read a book during that time? Am I going to, you know, what am I going to do? And so I basically, you know, it's funny, but I Googled, what is personal development? You know, what is personal development? I wanted to kind of get a broader sense of it. And I came up with six practices that, from doing research and reading articles and websites, I came up with six things. It was meditation, affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and scribing. And the funny thing is, and if you ask successful people, you'll often hear them claim any one of those as the single thing that changed their life. So, for example, Will Smith believes in positive affirmations. He believes that how you talk to yourself, you know, determines everything. And obviously, you know, he says that's where how he got so successful. He started telling himself that he was just as capable as any other person on the planet, and that he was just as deserving and as committed and everything else. And so Jim Carrey talks about visualization, how he wrote himself a check and visualized being paid $10 million for a movie, and he visualized it over and over and over until it became a reality. So I thought, well, at first I was trying to decide between the six. I thought, which one of these should I do? And then I thought, what if I do all six of them, right? What if I do all six? And so the Lifesavers is, when I was writing the book and I was writing down the practices, I started to notice some of the letters kind of formed a word. And it was I saw an A, a V, an E, and an R, although the meditation didn't fit, and then journaling didn't fit. So I changed meditation with silence, so now we got S-A-V-E-R, and then I changed journaling with scribing, S-C-R-I-B-I-N-G, right? Scribing, which is means writing. So it became the Savers model of personal development, the Lifesavers. So S is for silence, then A is for affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and scribing. And I have a lot of people will, you know, send me emails or write reviews and say they love that they've got the acronym because it really keeps them on track and they can remember in their mind that, okay, what do I do first? Okay, I start with silence. And that can be not only meditation, that can be prayer, right? Or it can be a combination. For me, it's a combination of both. And then go through all of the Savers.
We're talking to Hal Elrod. Hal, chapter 7 of the book is entitled The 6-Minute Miracle for Busy People. Talk to the busy people.
Yeah, when I was doing this, you know, there were days where I just didn't have an hour to do it. You know, I only had a half an hour. And there were some days where I was like, I've got to leave in like 10 minutes. I don't have time to do it at all. And so one day I just had this realization. I thought, what if I do a 6-minute version? What if instead of doing 10 minutes for each of the six practices that, you know, add up to an hour, what if I just do 1 minute, but I really focus? I'm really focused. I'm really present. So I tried it, and I did 1 minute of silence. You know, I said a quick prayer. I just got calm. And after a minute, I opened my eyes, and I felt at peace. I mean, it was amazing. I didn't feel like most people do. They feel rushed and, you know, busy and chaotic in the morning. I felt at peace after just 1 minute. Then I pulled out my affirmations, which really reflected kind of like Will Smith, right? It was the words that reflected who I had been in the past, but who I was capable of being at my best, and that I was committed to being that person today. I read through my affirmation. It only took a minute, but I felt empowered. Then I closed my eyes and I visualized some of my goals and what I wanted. Then I visualized what I needed to do that day, which is something I teach in the Miracle Morning, by the way, is, you know, visualization as it is commonly taught is not that effective. Most gurus or experts only teach you to visualize the end result. Visualize the goal and you'll get motivated to want to achieve it. That's great and that's true. However, the most important part, I believe, of visualization that I teach in the Miracle Morning is, how do you visualize once you get the goal and you're excited for it? Okay, but that's not going to get you the goal, right? The goal is not going to get you the goal. It's the daily, you know, activities that can sometimes be monotonous or repetitive or even, you know, even uncomfortable. But it's those daily activities that are going to get you the goal. So I spend 30 seconds visualizing the goal and then 30 seconds visualizing myself that day doing exactly what I needed to do to achieve the goal. And that became my daily visualization process. Then I exercised for a minute. You know, I did jumping jacks for 1 minute. And by the way, do jumping jacks, you know, at full speed for a minute, and you'll be out of breath. I mean, it's pretty. My heart rate was going. My oxygen was flowing to my brain. I felt more awake, more alert. Then I pulled out my self-help book. I read a page or two for a minute, and then I pulled out my journal, wrote down something I was grateful for, and something I was committed to doing that day. And I'll tell you, 6 minutes later, I felt so inspired, so empowered, so energized, and that's when I created the 6-Minute Miracle Morning. And I just realized this is totally scalable, and this makes it so that I now have no excuse to ever not do the Miracle Morning, because, you know, there's never not 6 minutes in the day, even if you're, you know, even if you're rushed. So that's the 6-Minute Miracle Morning, and, you know, I do that probably, you know, 2 or 3 days out of the week. I'll do the 6-Minute Miracle Morning as opposed to a full-blown Miracle Morning.
Recently, you were talking about secrets of self-discipline, and I quote you now, "Those who only do what they feel like doing don't do much. To be successful, you must take action, even when you don't feel like it, knowing that the action itself will provide the motivation you need to follow through." Please.
Yeah, that's actually, that quote, it's really something that's kind of based on a philosophy that I learned from John Maxwell in his book Failing Forward. And the philosophy, or you can call it a strategy, that John Maxwell teaches, he calls it act your way into feeling, which is the idea that most people are sitting around, you know, accepting mediocrity for their lives and only doing what they feel like doing. And they might feel like watching TV. They might feel like sleeping in. They might feel like eating fast food. They might, right? Those are the things they feel like doing. And most people do not much more than they feel like doing. And that's why they're not living the extraordinary lives that we're all capable of. And so for me, I realized that I learned from John Maxwell, you have to, it's the opposite. You can't wait to feel your way into action. You have to act your way into feeling. For example, if you're tired and you don't feel like going to the gym, motivation is not going to come up and swoop you off the couch and get you there. But if you get in, if you lazily, you know, you could be like a zombie, pack your gym bag, you know, even though you're not motivated, get in the car, start the car, drive to the gym. Jack, what do you think is going to happen when you get to the gym? What are you probably going to do when you get there?
Not much. Not much.
Well, no, it's actually the opposite, and I didn't mean if I led you the wrong way. No, when you go to the gym, you're probably going to go inside, right? If you drove all the way there, you're probably going to go inside. And when you go inside and you hear the music and you feel the energy and you see the people working out, you're probably going to get your, you know, put those clothes on that are in your gym bag, and you're probably going to work out. And then how are you going to feel? You're probably going to feel great, right? You're going to feel a sense of pride, like, I did that. And it wasn't, but people get overwhelmed by having to, you know, think, oh, I got to be motivated to take action. And that's not the truth. Most people that take action, they're not motivated until they take action. And it's the action itself that provides the motivation that you need to keep taking more action. But initially, you got to get your butt up when you don't feel like it and do the thing you don't feel like doing that you know you should be doing.
We're talking to Hal Elrod, www.themiraclemorning.com. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to Hal Elrod. Hal, we've just embarked on a new year. And recently, you wrote an article, 4 questions to guarantee that 2014 will be your best year yet. And the 4 questions are, what did I accomplish in 2013? What were my biggest disappointments? What valuable lessons can I learn from each? And what are my top 3 guidelines for 2014? Can you share thoughts with us on that?
Yeah, and this actually, I believe that was based on the first Best Year Ever Blueprint teleseminar that I ran. And I actually do this every year. In fact, if your listeners, they can access, we just ran the 2014 Best Year Ever Blueprint teleseminar. And it's a really cool process that I coach you through, reviewing your, you know, 2013 and really getting the most from it. And I give you a 10-page document to actually create your Best Year Ever Blueprint for 2014. And it's totally free. And you can go to bestyeareverblueprint.com and get the audio and get the document that follows along with it. Again, that's bestyeareverblueprint.com. And so this is kind of like a shortened summary version of one of the sections, and that is going through these questions. The thing is, in order to get where you want to go, you've got to know where you are. And kind of like a GPS, right? You know, GPS, whenever you set your GPS, it first wants to know where are you now so it can give you directions to where you want to go. And most people don't take a lot of time to reflect and really assess, where am I now? What am I doing well? What am I not doing well? What do I need to change? What am I committed to changing? How am I going to change it? When am I going to change it, right? Who's going to hold me accountable? I mean, so this is a more of that, these are more questions that are in the best year ever blueprint process. But just kind of in general, I mean, this is such an important thing to do. In fact, it's now part of my daily process of visualization, affirmations, the miracle morning stuff. I added something just this morning for 2014, and that is daily reflection. So instead of just asking these questions on an annual basis, which is a great place to start, I'm going to start asking questions like these on a daily basis. So these specific questions, the first one, what did I accomplish in 2013? Often we end the year feeling bad about the things that we didn't do. We often, there's some sort of, in the Miracle Morning, I call it gap focus. I write about what I call gap focus, which is how human beings, for whatever reason, human nature, is to focus on the gap between where we are and where we want to be and feel bad about it, right? Or the gap between where we are and where we could have been or think we should have been, or even worse, focus on the gap between where we are and where somebody else is, right? And feel some sense of envy of that other person. And so it's important that you always start, anytime you're assessing yourself, it's great to start with, hey, what am I doing well? What did I accomplish this last year? Like, for example, every time I do a coaching session with one of my private coaching clients, the first question that, we, you know, and they're already ready for it. They prepare this ahead of time. But the first question is, what were your top three wins, W-I-N-S, your wins, the positive things that have happened since we last spoke? And it's just forcing you to focus on, hey, I'm not all bad. I'm not all falling short. There are actually things I am doing well that I should focus on and acknowledge myself for. And it's so important because it really affects your quality of life and how you feel about yourself and how much confidence you have moving forward. So start out your annual review by asking what you accomplished and taking an inventory of this past 12 months so that you can build some confidence and some momentum and some belief for, hey, if I did that these last 12 months, I can do even better these next 12 months. The second is, what were my biggest disappointments? And this is where a lot of people lie to themselves. They don't acknowledge their disappointments. They just think, I'm good enough, right? Good enough is good enough. I'm fine. You know, I'm fine. You know, the way I eat is all right. I mean, other people eat that way too. Or, smoking cigarettes isn't going to kill me this year. You know, whatever it is, they're not brutally honest with themselves. And it's important that you are brutally honest, if not painfully honest with yourself, about where did you fall short? Or where are you falling short right now? What were your disappointments? Where did you not? Because you've got to be painfully honest so you decide, you know what, those things are no longer acceptable for me. Like, I can't, you know, you've got to acknowledge what is no longer acceptable for you. What are your disappointments that you're going to make changes in? Third question, what valuable lessons can I learn from each? And that's where you don't just feel sorry for yourself. Well, when I say from each, by the way, I mean, what can you learn from each of your accomplishments and what can you learn from each of your disappointments? So your accomplishment, you might go, you know what, I can learn that I did that well and I got away from that, so I need to get back to that, right? I need to get back to that. Or you might go, you know what, that thing that I accomplished or whatever, that was really showing me that I need to get out of my comfort zone more often, because that was out of my comfort zone at first, right? And then you look at your disappointments. You go, what did I learn from those? You go, well, maybe that one is, you know, I learned, but I'm not going to do that anymore, right? That might be your most common lesson from all your disappointments is, I'm not willing to do that thing that led to that disappointment anymore. And then finally, what are your top three guidelines for 2014? That is, what are the things you're going to do on a daily or ongoing basis? Maybe it's every other day. Maybe it's once a week. Maybe it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Most things, it's every day, to set yourself up for success in 2014. So I'll give you, here's my guidelines. First one is the Miracle Morning. Every day, I know from having done this for 4 years that it's the single most determining factor in my success, my quality of life, and how every day goes, right? And if I nail the morning and I have a focused, productive morning, it's very difficult to have an unfocused, unproductive day. So the Miracle Morning is my number one guideline. The number two guideline is to review my goals every day and schedule the most important actions that are in alignment with my goals. That's the second guideline of what I'm going to do every single day. And then the third guideline is to reflect on a daily and weekly basis. And so basically this whole process I'm teaching you right now is a process of reflection. So I'm going to go, okay, every day, what am I doing well? What am I not doing well? What do I need to be doing better? And what are the commitments I'm going to make, and when am I going to make them moving forward? That's kind of a general idea. So, and then beyond that, I mean, I focus on gratitude every day. So there's other things that I do, but these are my top three guidelines to make 2014 my best year ever, and yours might be absolutely different.
We're talking to Hal Elrod. Hal, as our time winds down this evening, what advice would you leave our young listeners with?
It's decide what you want and figure out what you need to do to get it, and then have someone hold you accountable to do it. So those are my three tips for you. Decide what you want, and if you're not sure what you want, just make it up, guess, and it can change along the way. A lot of people get hung up and they go, well, I don't know if that's what I really want or if that's the thing I want the most, and so they just don't do anything because they use a lack of clarity as an excuse. There, you know, I've had a lot of goals and dreams where I worked on them and they ended up not being what I wanted, but because I was working on them, I was becoming the person that I needed to be with the discipline and the habits and the mindset so that when the right goal or the right dream showed its face and I go, oh, actually, I want that and not what I'm doing now, then I was able to easily transition and move my energy into a better direction for my life. So what do you want? What do you need to do to make it happen? And by the way, let me back up one step. The what do you want needs to always be accompanied by why do you want it? What, you want to make more money? Why? What are you going to do with that money? Why is it important to you? Are you going to give, you know, do you want freedom? Do you want to give your family financial security so you guys don't have to stress anymore? Do you want to, you know, retire young? I mean, do you want to buy a house? What? Why do you want that goal? So whenever I say figure out what you want, that always is accompanied by why do you want it? The second thing is, what do you need to do to get it, right? Figure out what do you need to do on an ongoing basis to make that goal or that dream a reality. And then I really believe one of the most important components of being highly successful is employing accountability. Who can you partner with? A friend, a colleague, a coworker, a mentor, a parent, a boss, a, you know, whoever that you can hold you accountable. And I've got one of my closest friends. We meet every Friday, and we hold each other accountable. That's what I do for my coach. You know, you might want to hire a coach. My coaching clients, you know, that's one of the biggest reasons they hire me is not only do I help them figure out strategies to succeed, but as important, I hold them accountable call after call after call that here's what they're committing to do this week, and then I hold them accountable to it the week after. And more often than not, they do it because they had accountability. It's too easy to let yourself off the hook. So don't miss that last piece, that third tip. Get someone to hold you accountable to what you say you're going to do, and then, you know, provide the same for them. Hold them accountable.
Hal, thanks very much for your amazing story and the inspiration this evening. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great 2014, because with God, anything is possible. Spahol.